Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, July 27th, 2024. Scurry County Judge declares disaster after 5.1 quake. Midlander says Wilco building swayed for 15 seconds as Tembler felt in Tall City. A 5.1 magnitude earthquake Friday morning struck near Snyder, the largest of more than 80 quakes that have happened in this area over the past 7 days. The earthquake was located about 10 miles northeast of Snyder on the Scurry-Fisher County line, just south of the East Farm to Market Road 1614, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. The quake was recorded at 9:28 a.m. and was about 2 miles deep. Scurry County Judge Dan Hick made a disaster declaration Friday and has requested assistance from the state of Texas. He cited damage found in businesses and residences throughout the county. Oil and gas operations in the area. Mariah Operating and Browning Oil Company have wells in the immediate area, according to the Railroad Commission's GIS map. And Kinder Morgan operates a carbon dioxide transmission pipeline along FM 1614. Carl Vornsan, Vice President of Operations for Mariah Energy, told the Reporter Telegram that the company is aware of the seismic activity in the area and is closely monitoring its facilities for signs of damage. While the company continues to monitor the situation, he said no signs of damage have been seen. A spokeswoman for Kinder Morgan, which has extensive producing and carbon dioxide enhanced oil recovery operations in Scurry County, declined to speculate on any causes of the seismicity, but said the company's operations have not been impacted. Railroad Commission response. Railroad Commissioner Jim Wright told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview the agency is sending investigators to the area and will work to determine if water injection was a contributing factor. Quote, we're doing a lot of work in that space. The industry, the Railroad Commission, the Bureau of Economic Geology, we're making progress, end quote, Wright said. Eyes on injection wells. Steve Melzer of Meltzer Consulting told the Reporter Telegram by email that Friday morning's earthquake even swayed the Wilco building for 15 seconds. Quote, I had been worried about this area east of Snyder for a while, and this one will trigger action by the Railroad Commission, end quote, he wrote. Quote, I expect the Snyder folks are bombarding the RRC right now with calls, end quote. Providing a map of new horizontal wells in the Scurry County Fisher County area, Meltzer pointed to 6 injection wells located close to the Fisher County line that he called troubling. Quote, it is a bit early for pointing fingers, and I don't have their volumes of injection, but I am sure they are big volume injectors. They look to be injecting deep, likely the Strawn Formation at more than 7,000 feet, end quote, he wrote. A rattling week. As of 3 p.m. Friday, the USGS earthquake map showed 22 earthquake events of all magnitudes that happened Friday, ranging from 1.5 to 5.1. Over the past 30 days, this area northeast of Snyder has seen 83 earthquakes, 81 of which have happened over the past 7 days. Earthquakes rated at 4.9 and 4.4 occurred late Monday night, and a 4.0 happened Wednesday evening. Flying high. Sibley Nature Center reports influx of snout butterflies. Don't be alarmed if you see a dark mass flying through the sky. Although sometimes they may fly erratically, it's just the American snout butterflies. Sibley Nature Museum scientist Michael Nickel said that he spotted many American snout butterflies, also known as the snout butterfly, this year. The American snout butterfly is known for its elongated snout. It is a small butterfly that is orange, brown, and white in color. Quote, the American snout butterfly is a master of camouflage, end quote, Nickel said. Quote, they blend into trees and look like a dead leaf. They are a migrating species, end quote. According to Gregory Wilson, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Program Specialist, the American snout butterfly migrates through our region annually. The American snout butterfly mainly resides in the southern regions of the United States and species can be seen in South Texas. While they don't have a certain directional migration, they generally move together in a northward direction. Quote, during their migrations, they may become so numerous that they darken the sky, end quote, Wilson said. Quote, the American snout butterfly is renowned for its unpredictable mass migrations between June and October, believed to be influenced by droughts and heavy summer rains, end quote. Nichols said that although he's seen a couple of snout butterflies throughout the years, he's seeing an increase this year. Quote, we're seeing an influx of the American snout butterfly, end quote, Nichols said. Quote, I haven't seen this many butterflies in so many years, end quote. Wilson said that the butterflies spend the winter in the adult stage, mate during the night, and lay eggs on host plants. He added that caterpillars go through several stages before becoming pupae, or a cocoon, and transforming into adults in 15 to 17 days. Nichols added that during migration, you aren't seeing the same generation of butterflies the whole time. Quote, the butterflies we see in the area are the offspring, the first or second generation of butterflies, end quote, Nichols said. Wilson added that there can be up to four generations of the snout butterflies per year. During the caterpillar stage, the species consumes leaves of hackberry trees. As adults, they seek out nectar of flowers such as aster, dogbane, goldenrod, milkweed, and white and yellow flowers. Nichols said that the butterflies will be attracted to nectar and bright colored flowers. He added that people can support them by planting flowers and milkweed that nourish the caterpillars and butterflies. Quote, butterflies are important insects, end quote, Nichols said. Quote, they are important pollinators in the ecosystem, end quote. As Wilson mentioned, Midland may be seeing an increase in snout butterflies due to droughts and heavy summer rains. He explained that droughts decrease the number of parasteroids and a type of deadly parasitic larvae, and heavy rains promote the growth of hackberry leaves to nourish the caterpillars. Quote, moreover, the rains induce the butterflies to emerge from hibernation and lay eggs, which may result in population explosions that darken the sky, end quote. Drilling activity posts weekly, monthly gain. Drilling activity has begun breaking out of its slump as July comes to an end. Oil field services firm Baker Hughes said Friday the U.S. rig count it issues weekly rose by 3 weeks to 589, the second consecutive increase. Still, the count is down 75 rigs, or 11%, from the 664 rigs active nationwide a year ago. For the month of July, the rig count added 8 rigs, the first monthly increase since February, and the biggest monthly gains since November 2022. The number of rigs seeking crude oil climbed by 5 to 482, 47 rigs below the 529 drilling for oil a year ago. In July, the number of rigs drilling for oil rose by 3, the first monthly increase since March. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas fell by 2 rigs to 101, down 27 rigs from 128 a year ago. For the month of July, the number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose by 4, the biggest monthly increase since July 2023. Texas continued to see 276 rigs at work statewide, down 46 from 322 a year ago. New Mexico also remained unchanged with 108 rigs. Alaska 1, North Dakota 1, and Oklahoma 2 were the major producing states to see an increase. Louisiana 1 was the only major producing state to see a decrease. The Permian Basin bucked the national and state trend, falling by 1 rig to 304 rigs working across the region. That's 30 rigs below the 334 reported last July. Eddy County, New Mexico, remains the most active county in the Permian, reporting 53 rigs for a second week. Lee County, New Mexico, is close behind with 51 rigs. Martin County reported 31 rigs for a fourth consecutive week, while Reeves County had 26 rigs for a second week. Loving County continues to see 22 rigs. Midland County had 18 rigs for a third week. Reagan and Upton counties each had 14 rigs, and Howard County had 12 rigs. Tom Green County saw no activity this week after losing its one rig. Energy Dedicated Software, as a service firm in Barris, said its U.S. rig count for the week ended July 19th fell 5 rigs to 620. That's down 95 rigs, or 13% from 715 a year earlier. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil surged 9 rigs to 202 rigs, but comes in 226 rigs, or 53% below the 428 rigs drilling for oil last July. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas fell by 3 to 95 and is 89 rigs, or 48% below the 184 rigs seeking natural gas a year earlier. ExxonMobil continues to top the list of top 10 operators by rig count with 38 rigs, down 1 for the week. ConocoPhillips was second with 31 rigs, down 1, and EOG Resources was third with 25 rigs, unchanged for the week. Enverus Permian rig count for the week ended July 19th fell by 1 to 303, 44 rigs, or 13% below the 347 rigs drilling throughout the Permian last year. Enverus' most active play, the Delaware, added 2 rigs for 167, still 23 rigs, or 12% below the 190 rigs active in the Delaware last July. The Midland Basin fell 1 rig to 118 and is 14 rigs, or 11% below the 132 seen last year. Looking at trailing 30-day drilling permits for the week ended July 5th, the Permian sank to 786 from 842 the previous week, but is up from 659 a year earlier. There were 112 frac crews active in the Permian during the week of July 5th, up from 107 the previous week, but down from 142 a year earlier. City Council tackles alcohol permits, Wildcatter Trail. City Council covered a lot at its meeting Tuesday. Here's a rundown in case you missed it. Shoring up the pension. After a lengthy discussion, council members voted to pursue a pension obligation bond to help fix the $120 million unfunded liability. If the bond makes it to the November ballot, the deadline of which is August 19th, the amount will be between $60 million and $61 million. Time is ticking to address the $120 million unfunded liability with the pension fund. The next stop is the Midland Firemen's Relief and Retirement Fund board to discuss. New water source. City Council approved a memorandum of understanding to build infrastructure to pipe water from Fort Stockton Holdings to Midland, Abilene, and San Angelo. A Reporter Telegram report this week found that the deal between the cities and Fort Stockton Holdings could face headwinds because of a series of lawsuits, two of which are in the Texas Supreme Court, as well as climatological issues. Crossing guards after all. After talking with Midland ISD and local private schools about sharing in the cost, council members approved a contract with a crossing guard management firm. Council deferred voting on the matter at its July 9th meeting to discuss splitting the bill. The MISD Board of Trustees will hear more on the matter at its July 30th meeting. In all, there were 54 locations where crossing guards will work. Hike and bike trail advances. Council members voted to authorize the city manager to advertise a request for architectural and engineering services for the Wildcatter Trail, a hike and bike trail to be built between Midland and Odessa. Councilman Jack Ladd said the Wildcatter Trail will improve quality of life in Midland. Addressing blighted buildings. City Council members voted unanimously to move forward with the process to address 2 substandard unoccupied homes in Midland. One building is at 501 South Lorraine Street, from which fire damage in April 2023 made it uninhabitable. Demolition will happen at the request of the property owner. The second property is at 102 Canyon Drive. Property owner Carolyn Snyder told the Dais that she had been working with the city code enforcement staff last year to get help with property. She alleged that the city informed her months later that squatters prevented cleanup from happening. Quote, "I'm not a violator," end quote, she said. Snyder also owns the property at 100 Canyon Drive. MDC items get okay. City Council approved a number of items for Midland Development Corp. First was the 2024-25 budget. Tax revenue is expected to be $14 million next fiscal year. An interlocal agreement between the MDC and the University of Texas Permian Basin to continue the Midland Entrepreneurial Challenge was also approved. This will be the 7th year for the program. In total, 29 small Midland businesses received $2.7 million in funding to grow their businesses. City Council greenlit a deal between the MDC and MITRE Corp. in the amount of $375,000 for research and development, systems engineering, and related advisory services for commercial space and high-speed flight operations in the Permian Basin. Also approved was a $120,000 contract with the Hickman Group for retail recruitment services. Hickman leads business development for the Dallas Cowboys. The contract is for 1 year. Racquet Club Alley. A public hearing was held on a request to vacate the alley between Racquet Club and a trio of properties to address traffic and safety concerns. The city did not receive any objections from neighbors or utility companies. To vacate the alley, it must be purchased for the appraised value of $53,428 and receive a replot. Who will buy what portion of the alley is in the works? City Council approved the item. More storage space. Midland Self Storage, 3600 North Big Spring Street, received a approval to expand after a public hearing was held. Supporting the community. Council approved the distribution of Community Development Block Grant funding to various organizations such as the Salvation Army, Senior Life Midland, West Texas Food Distribution Program, and Casa de Amigos. Alcohol permit approvals. Public hearings were held and on alcohol permit requests by Restaurant St. Blaise, 508 West Wall Street in the Frost Bank Building, Marty G's Cajun Eats, 5701 Starboard Drive, and La Florida, 201 Longview Avenue, Suite J2, in the Midland Crossing Shopping Center. All were approved. WTI spends week below $80. Oil prices spent the week below the $80 level, weighed down by supply and demand concerns, and marked its third consecutive weekly decline. West Texas Intermediate fell 3 of 5 trading days on the New York Mercantile Exchange as a 63-cent rise Wednesday and 69-cent rise Thursday were unable to offset declines Monday and Tuesday, and especially the $1.12 or 1.4% drop Friday, as traders worried about falling Chinese demand and increased supply should there be a Gaza ceasefire agreement. Futures ended the week at $77.16, down from $80.13 at last Friday's close. The posted price ended the week at $73.64, according to Plains All American. Natural gas futures likewise had a rough week on the NYMEX, though the week opened with prices surging 12.3 cents Monday. Prices then began an uninterrupted retreat that saw Henry Hub futures close just above $2 at $2.006 per MCF, down from $2.128 at last Friday's close. Phil Flynn, author of the Phil Flynn Energy Report, wrote that oil prices also got caught up in, quote, the tech wreck, end quote, that saw a huge sell-off in big tech stocks that sent the S&P, NASDAQ, and Dow Jones all sharply lower Wednesday. That caused traders to ignore extremely bullish oil data, Flynn wrote in his daily report. Flynn cited John Kemp and Reuters reports that U.S. crude oil inventories have depleted faster than normal over the last 4 weeks, squeezing hedge funds, running short positions, keeping spot prices firm, and the futures curve in a steep backwardation. Flynn quoted Kemp saying, quote, commercial crude inventories across the United States depleted by 24 million barrels between June 21st and July 19th, according to the Energy Information Administration. End quote. According to Kemp, the drawdown in crude stocks this year has been more than twice as fast as the average over the previous 10 years. Those draws, Flynn wrote, quote, were not a surprise to us, but we think the draws would have started even sooner. We believe that even with a Chinese slowdown, oil demand growth has exceeded production growth, helped along by OPEC plus product restraints, end quote. Ballots start filling up for local elections. The window to apply for ballot spots in the November general election for local races opened July 20th. After 1 week, there are several candidates who are eager to be reelected or take someone else's spot. Midland City Council. Both at-large city council seats are up for grabs. As of 4 p.m. Friday, incumbents Robin Poole and Eric Davidson had both filed to be on the ballot. Heather Bredemus and Brian Stubbs submitted applications this week to be the next council member to represent District 1, a spot currently held by Scott Dufford. John Norman is seeking re-election for District 2. Midland ISD Board of Trustees. Courtney Ratliff and Denise Norman are seeking the Midland ISD Board of Trustees seat for District 1, which is currently held by Michael Booker. Neville Patton applied for District 4, a spot that Katie Joyner holds. Robert Marquez is looking to be re-elected for the District 2 trustee spot. There haven't been any filings for District 7. Midland College Board of Trustees. Mike Ostman filed his application to run for Place 4 of the Midland College Board, a seat currently held by Paul Morris. Steve Castle, Place 5, and Charlene McBride, Place 6, have filed for re-election. Know before you file. August 19th is the last day to file to be on the November 5th general election ballot. Before you file, make sure you check out the Texas Secretary of State's website to learn more about running in Texas. City has 30 vacancies for boards, commissions. If you're interested in getting involved in city government, but you don't want to run for office, there are several opportunities to serve on a board or a commission. There are currently 30 seats available due to term expirations or vacancies, according to a news release from the city. Applications will be accepted through August 9th. Application forms can be found at the city's website or at City Hall, 300 North Lorain Street, in the city secretary's office on the third floor. City Council will begin making appointments in September. Most terms will begin October 1st and vary between 2 and 4 years. Here's a list of boards and commissions, including vacancies. Airport Planning and Development Board, 1 seat available, 10 members total, 3-year terms, meets on the third Wednesday of each month at 10 a.m. in the third floor media room at Midland International Air and Spaceport. Advises City Council and Airport Director regarding the promotion and development of Midland Industrial Park, Midland International Air and Spaceport, and Midland Air Park. Eligibility requirements, residents of Midland County. Animal Control Advisory Board, 3 seats available, 7 members total, 4-year terms. Meets the third Monday in January, March, May, July, September, and November at the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center, 2300 Butternut Lane. Advises City Council and the City's Animal Services Division on animal control problems and compliance with regulations of state or other governmental entity. Eligibility requirements: 1 licensed veterinarian, 1 animal shelter employee, 1 animal welfare organization representative, 1 county or municipal office, and 3 citizens. Barbara and George H.W. Bush Convention Center Advisory Board. 1 seat available, 7 members, 3-year terms, 4 board members appointed by the City of Midland, meets quarterly, dates and times to be determined, makes recommendations to the City Council regarding the management of the Barbara and George H.W. Bush Convention Center and matters related thereto. Building and Fire Code Review Committee / Construction Board of Adjustments and Appeals. 6 seats available. Board must consist of an architect, a second architect, a fire protection contractor or specialist, a general contractor, an electrical contractor, a home builder, a plumbing and mechanical contractor, a structural engineer, and a city council liaison. Meets as needed. Reviews the present building and fire codes of the City of Midland and advises the City Council of any additions or deletions thereto that the committee recommends. Reviews new editions of the International Code Council codes and makes recommendations to the Council concerning their adoption. Upon request of the City Council, the committee shall also advise the Council on any other matters related to the building or fire codes that are brought to the Council's attention from time to time. Hears and decides appeals from orders, decisions, or determinations made by the fire code official in accordance with International Building Code Section 113.2 and the International Fire Code Section 108.2. Eligibility requirements. City of Midland resident. Citizens Development and Hotel / Motel Advisory Board. 3 seats vacant. 7 members total, 2-year terms. Meets as needed in the basement conference room at City Hall. Advises City Council on the matters of advertising the City of Midland and promoting its growth and development pursuant to Chapter 371 of the Texas Local Government Code, and use of hotel / motel funds collected pursuant to Chapter 351 of the Texas Tax Code. Midland Housing Authority Commission. 1 seat available, 5 members total, 2-year terms, meets the fourth Monday of each month at 11:45 a.m. in the conference room of the Midland Housing Authority, 700 West Scarborough Drive. Operates on behalf of local government to serve the housing authority needs of the community's low-income housing for the elderly and disabled. Eligibility requirements. No member may be an officer or employee of the City of Midland. Midland-Odessa Urban Transit District Board. 3 seats available, 12 members total, 6 from Midland, 6 from Odessa, 2-year terms. Meets the fourth Wednesday of each month at noon at 10300 Younger Road in Midland. Provide oversight of the transit system operating in Midland and Odessa. Midland Spaceport Development Corporation. 1 seat available. 7 members total, 4 appointed by City Council, 3 appointed by Midland County. 2-year terms. Meets the second Thursday of the first month of each quarter. Supports the creation and development of a spaceport project in Midland and for any lawful purpose permitted by Texas Nonprofit Corporation law. Oil and Gas Advisory Commission. 2 seats available, 5 members total, 3 petroleum engineers or geologists, 2 with property development or real estate experience, 3-year terms. Meets as needed. Assists the City of Midland Planning Division with the administrative review of oil and gas well permit applications for 1, technical compliance with the requirements of Section 6-1-23 of the City Code regarding oil and gas well permits issued on or after January 1, 2010, and 2, administrative completeness. The committee may also recommend a surface location where there is a disagreement between the operator and the owner. The committee is subject to the Texas Open Meetings Act, but functions in an advisory capacity only. Parks and Recreation Commission. 2 seats available, 9 members total, 3-year terms. Meets 6 times per year, typically on the third Tuesday of the month at 11:30 a.m. at the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center, 2300 Butternut Lane. Advises the City Council and Community Services Department concerning all matters pertaining to public parks and recreation in the city. Eligibility requirements. Resident, citizen, taxpayer, and qualified voter. Planning and Zoning Commission. 1 seat available, 7 members and 2 alternates total, 3-year terms. Meets every first and third Monday of the month at 3:30 p.m. in the City Council Chamber, City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. Considers issues regarding developments and improvements of property within the city limits and makes recommendations to the City Council. Eligibility requirements. Resident of City of Midland, owner of real property within the city limits, and qualified voter. Zoning Board of Adjustment and Airport Zoning Board of Adjustment. 2 seats and 4 alternate seats available. 5 members and 4 alternate members total. 2-year terms. Meets as needed at a time and place to be determined. Makes decisions on appeals from determinations made by the building official regarding special exemptions and specific variances. Oil Report. Oxy Crown Rock waiting period ends. Echo Petrol once in. Occidental Petroleum's $12 billion acquisition of Crown Rock from Lime Rock Partners and the Dunn family of Midland is approaching the finish line. Occidental announced this week the Hart-Scott-Rodino waiting period for the acquisition has expired. That means, the company said, conditions to closing have been satisfied, other than those to be satisfied at closing. The acquisition is now expected to close in August after completion of the financing marketing period contemplated in the purchase agreement. At the same time, Eco Petrol, the largest and primary petroleum company in Colombia, notified Occidental of its plans to acquire an undivided 30% interest in the Crown Rock assets. The two companies are in discussions regarding a structure for Ecopetrol's potential acquisition of the interest. If consummated, Occidental expects the Ecopetrol transaction purchase price to be approximately $3.6 billion. In 2019, Occidental Midland Basin LLC, a wholly owned indirect subsidiary of Occidental, and Ecopetrol Permian LLC formed Rodeo Midland Basin as a joint venture to develop and operate oil and gas properties in the Midland Basin. The $1.5 billion joint venture is comprised of 97,000 net acres of Occidental's holdings across Andrews, Ector, Glasscock, Howard, Martin, Midland, Reagan, and Upton counties. The acreage includes 4,700 gross drilling locations with rights to multiple benches, including the Middle and Lower Spraberry and the Wolfcamp A, B, and C. Under that joint venture, each of Occidental Midland Basin and Ecopetrol were given the right, subject to certain conditions, to participate in oil and gas interests acquired by the other and its affiliates in an area of mutual interest. If Occidental and Ecopetrol fail to agree on a structure for Ecopetrol to acquire the 30% stake in Crown Rock, Ecopetrol will have the option to allow the Rodeo Midland JV to acquire the Crown Rock assets. This would result in an indirect ownership by Ecopetrol of an undivided 49% interest in the Crown Rock assets. This option expires in August 2024. Occidental expects to use any proceeds from the Ecopetrol transaction to pay down a portion of its term loans. Golden Pass to ramp up in Sabine Pass after approval. A settlement reached earlier this week between Golden Pass and its contractor, Zachry, received court approval Wednesday, resolving a dispute that brought the massive gas liquefaction project to a halt and put thousands of people out of work. U.S. bankruptcy judge Marvin Iskier said during a Wednesday hearing in Houston that the settlement formally removes Zachry from the Golden Pass LNG project it was building for ExxonMobil and Qatar Energy. Quote, "By dusk tonight, Zachry will no longer have any control or right to direct the project," end quote, Iskier said. The legal fight took place as part of Zachry's bankruptcy proceedings, which began in May, as Zachry laid off workers and blamed its struggles on Golden Pass. Golden Pass in June asked the court to force Zachry out of the project so it could proceed without it. The San Antonio-based contractor responded by accusing Exxon, Qatar, and the remaining contractors of, quote, "potential fraud," end quote. A spokesperson for Golden Pass said in a statement Wednesday that its contractors McDermott and Chioda would again, quote, "ramp up," end quote, at the construction site in Sabine Pass. Quote, "going forward," end quote, it said, quote, "we are focused on getting people back to work, including local workers and vendors, and progressing this critical energy project," end quote. A long idle oil platform left a miles-long sheen after Hurricane Beryl's winds. A rusted decades-old oil platform offshore Bolivar Peninsula was leaking enough petroleum last week to cause a sheen that stretched for miles, days after Hurricane Beryl and its Category 1 winds rattled through the Gulf before making landfall in Matagorda. The Texas General Land Office said Tuesday in a statement that it was working to address the leak, which it described as a discharge of natural gas, salt water, and diluted hydrocarbons. It declined to provide coordinates for the offending platform, but said it visited it twice since the incident was first reported to the agency on July 14th. Katy Seafood Market owner Buddy Gwendon, who escorted a KPRC news crew to the platform, said the leaking platform several miles offshore was in such bad shape that it appeared to be, quote, "falling apart," end quote. State Rep. Terry Leo Wilson said in a Facebook post that the abandoned platform was 8 miles offshore in state waters. The Texas Railroad Commission, which regulates the state's oil and gas industry, did not return requests for comment Tuesday. The platform is among hundreds of idle production platforms in the Gulf of Mexico, where strong storms and salt water accelerate their deterioration. It appears this platform has been idle for more than a decade and has leaked before, according to coordinates provided by Gwendon. Officials responded to a leak at a similar location in February 2014. That leak left a sheen that stretched for 3 or 4 miles, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. It was unclear whether the long, idle platform was leaking before Beryl brought 60-mile-per-hour winds to the area. The GLO said the cause of the incident is under investigation. The platform may have been leaking before the storm, Gwendon said. But the hurricane-force winds likely contributed to the volume of petroleum coming from it last week. Quote, anytime you wiggle old rusty pipes, it doesn't help, end quote, he said. Leaks such as this pose challenges for fish that are spawning at this time of year, he said, noting they come to the surface to feed after hatching. If they reach a surface coated in hydrocarbons, quote, they're dead, end quote, he said. Bayswater Energy successfully follows Geology East. Since it launched drilling operations in Howard County in 2021, Bayswater Exploration and Production has been following the geology as it develops its acreage. That geology has led the Denver-based company east into Mitchell County, where it has seen success drilling 2.5-mile Wolf Camp stepouts. Quote, we followed the geology. We did a significant amount of geologic mapping and log analysis, end quote. Aaron Fisher, senior geoscientist and technical manager, Permian Basin, told the Reporter-Telegram in a telephone interview. He said the company found carbonate-rich Wolfcamp A in its original eastern Howard County holdings before drilling its inaugural Far East No. 3 W well in 2021. Quote, we anticipated substantial effective porosity and high oil saturation within the carbonates, which we believed would significantly boost production. Our technical team at Bayswater developed a petrophysical model that integrated the conventional pore system alongside the traditional unconventional Wolfcamp A model, end quote, he said. That approach highlighted the productive potential of the Wolfcamp A extending into Mitchell County, allowing the company to push that potential 10 miles further east than the industry thought possible, he added. Several companies are already leasing offset acreage, Fisher said. John Dyer, senior vice president, Permian Basin, said the Mitchell County development is in its early stages, but that Bayswater is seeing good results. Quote, Aaron and I are excited about the wells, but there is still some analysis to be done, end quote, he said. Bayswater has drilled more than 30 wells in the Wolfcamp A formation. The company's initial projections targeted a 700,000-barrel type curve. Fisher and Dyer said there has been consistent performance across infill and child wells, achieving or exceeding that curve. They described the Wolfcamp A as relatively shallow in the area with an approximately 5,500 to 7,500 feet true vertical depth, which allows for drilling to be completed in just 8.5 days from spud to rig release. Bayswater has amassed over 30,000 acres in eastern Howard and northwestern Mitchell counties, and Fisher said the acreage lends itself to the 2.5-mile laterals. Bayswater has already drilled 45 Wolfcamp A wells, 24 of which are in production, and 21 are in various stages of completion. The company could drill hundreds of Wolfcamp A wells, Fisher said. Dyer said the company is, quote, always looking, end quote, for new opportunities. Quote, we like the Permian Basin a lot. We think it's a great place for a base of operations, end quote, he said. Quote, there are opportunities in the Permian Basin, end quote. Dyer attributed much of the company's success in Howard and Mitchell counties to the company's field office in Cahoma. The staff there is responsible for safely operating and producing the wells, quote, and doing a heck of a job for us, end quote. Digi works to improve oil field communications. As advancing technology allows more and more oil field equipment to transmit data to operators, the wide open spaces hosting oil field activity is making those transmissions harder. Companies like Digi International are stepping up to help improve communications. In the Permian Basin, Joseph Bladek, regional sales manager, told the Reporter-Telegram by telephone the vast Permian Basin oil fields offer challenges traditional cellular providers find difficult to meet. Digi provides industrial Internet of Things solutions, some of which use public and private cellular towers. Digi devices provide connectivity and remote access to customer equipment. There are two options, the plug-and-play box so that rather than sending a technician with a laptop to collect data, the box can send that data over cellular networks. It also improves safety by keeping workers off the road, he added. The second option is embedded modules that embed cellular connectivity into the customer's equipment. Quote, now we're seeing simple sensors, tank monitoring sensors, end quote, he said. And there is high demand for sensors monitoring for methane and explosive gases. Demand Digi's equipment can meet. Quote, data cables can have length limitations and there are rugged environments where cables could be cut or erode, end quote, he explained. Wired connectivity is also very costly. Wireless connectivity, either via long-range radio frequency modules or cellular modems, enables data communication to remote areas. These solutions are far less costly and much easier to service than wired connections. Digi offers these embedded radios as well as cellular gateways and routers designed for industrial operations in remote areas and harsh conditions. Customers can help determine how Digi configures the particular systems. Some want data sent to a central dashboard, while others want to keep transmissions more local. Other customers want a more autonomous intelligent system that runs algorithms and can distinguish between the need to activate alarms or send alerts. Digi offers wireless design services as well as professional services to help industrial outfits identify, procure, and deploy secure, resilient networking systems tailored to their particular needs. Oilfield customers have been very helpful in helping Digi develop innovative solutions, he said, citing systems that accommodate artificial intelligence, machine learning, the Internet of Things, cellular communications, which he said makes the industry profitable. The systems are affordable, especially when looking at the embedded modular solution, Mladic said. Digi handles a lot of the software, eliminating the need for customers to have a large engineering staff. And the devices are pre-certified by regulators and cellular carriers in a number of countries. And the devices also ship with data plans included. Digi began working in wireless communications about 20 years ago, Bladek said. Atlas Kodiak developing driverless truck deliveries. Atlas Energy Solutions does not shy away from unconventional solutions. The Austin-based company is constructing a 42-mile electrified conveyor system to carry sand from its mine at Kermit into Lee County, New Mexico. Now the company has teamed up with Kodiak Robotics to use autonomous trucking for its deliveries. Kodiak already has successfully made its first driverless delivery of frac sand in the Permian Basin, with a driverless truck delivering frac sand from an Atlas depot to a well site, a 21-mile drive. Daniel Goff, director of external affairs, told the Reporter-Telegram that several years ago, the company pivoted to commercial truck fleets. Quote, initially, we focused on long-haul trucking, end quote, he said in a telephone interview. The first trips included a safety driver behind the wheel in case of emergency. Now its fleet of trucks travel from its operations center in Lancaster, east to Atlanta and north to Oklahoma. Autonomous long-haul trucking is becoming common in Texas and across the South, Goff noted. For the past 2 years, Kodiak has been working on a $50 million Department of Defense project for off-road reconnaissance vehicles. Goff said the work with Atlas is a perfect marriage of autonomous and off-road driving. Quote, we made the first completely driverless delivery in May with no one in the cab, driving 21 miles on a private lease road, end quote, Goff noted. He said there was other traffic on the road, quote, and you can see drivers going by and doing double takes that there was no one in the cab, end quote. The two companies have a signed agreement to commercialize the technology. Atlas has placed an order for Kodiak-equipped driverless trucks that will deliver frac sand across the Permian Basin's existing infrastructure of private lease roads. Early next year, Atlas plans to launch commercial operations using its first two trucks equipped with the Kodiak Driver, Kodiak's industry-leading autonomous system. Under the agreement, Kodiak will provide its technology to Atlas via a driver as a service licensing agreement. Atlas will own the trucks, and Kodiak will provide the Kodiak drivers, fully redundant, platform agnostic, hardware and software stack designed for scalable driverless deployment. Kodiak will also provide operational support services, including remote monitoring from its operations center in Lancaster. Addressing safety, Goff said Kodiak, as part of the autonomous vehicle industry, builds what he called a safety case that he said offers comprehensive proof the vehicles are acceptably safe. He described how the computer drives the truck. First, there is a little motor attached to the steering column and an actuator that helps guide the steering wheel. If the computer says turn the wheel 5 degrees, the actuator turns the wheel 5 degrees. They are all highly reliable parts long in use, he said. There is risk in single components, so Kodiak installs a lot of redundancy in its system, Goff said. There are 2 motors on the steering column, 3 brake actuators, a main computer, and 2 backup computers, and 2 separate electrical systems. Quote, we also have fallback capabilities, so if anything goes wrong with the hardware, the truck, like a check engine light or a tire blows, the computer can pull the truck over safely, end quote, Goff said. 2, the company uses a sophisticated and detailed computer simulation environment to test multiple scenarios, from the appearance of cows to pedestrians. The results are analyzed and used to help Kodiak devise even more scenarios. Quote, we're very confident in our safety case, end quote, he said. With the successful first delivery, Goff said there is a huge opportunity, mid to long term, to apply industrial autonomous trucking logistics and improve safety on Permian Basin roads. For now, he said, Kodiak is focusing its Permian Basin efforts on its work with Atlas. Quote, this truly is a unique opportunity, end quote, he said. Community. Student officer selected for Texas FFA. Walton Marshall of the Glasscock County FFA has been selected to serve as a student officer for the Texas FFA Association. According to a news release, Marshall will serve as the Area 2 State Vice President. He is one of 12 students statewide who will lead FFA efforts for the 2024-25 school year. Area 2 covers 48 counties in West Texas, including Midland and Ector counties, and stretches as far west as El Paso. Marshall and others will work in partnership with the Board of Directors to develop policy for the Texas FFA and provide student leadership to Texas FFA members. Student officers statewide include Hunter Lawson, Paradise FFA, Area 4, President. Thomas Barton, Shepherd FFA, Area 9, First Vice President. Addie Carlson, Vega FFA, Area 1, Vice President. Walton Marshall, Glasscock County FFA, Area 2, Vice President. Augustus Mashinsky, Bridgeland, FFA, Area 3, Vice President. Caden Garner, Howe FFA, Area 5, Vice President. Jeremiah McGee, Union Grove FFA, Area 6, Vice President. Luke Anderson, James Madison FFA, Area 7, Vice President. Tanner Williams, Dawson FFA, Area 8, Vice President. Cassati Neal, Goliad FFA, Area 10, Vice President. Cash Smith, Fayetteville, FFA, Area 11, Vice President. Brady Lambert, College Station, FFA, Area 12, Vice President. During their 365 days in office, these student leaders will travel approximately 40,000 miles and will visit approximately 400 Texas schools, conducting leadership workshops and delivering keynote addresses, the release said. The Texas FFA is the nation's largest state FFA association with a membership of more than 177,000. FFA gives students the opportunity to apply practical agriculture-based classroom knowledge to real-world experiences through local, state, and national competitions and programs. Texas Roadhouse hosts Tip a Cop event for Special Olympics. Midland's Texas Roadhouse was bombarded with local law enforcement on Thursday evening, but not for the reason you may think. Texas Roadhouse partnered with local law enforcement for the 16th annual Tip a Cop event, a fundraiser for Special Olympics Texas. Quote, it's a fantastic way for us to support local law enforcement and their efforts to make a positive impact on the community, end quote, said Martiza Rosales, Texas Roadhouse local store marketer. Sheriff David Kreiner, sheriff's deputies, and Midland police officers volunteered to help serve Texas Roadhouse guests and collected their tips for the donation. Quote, they come in here and they work with local Special Olympics athletes and with our employees to try and raise money for the Special Olympics, end quote, said Rushy McKenzie, kitchen manager at Roadhouse. Quote, any and all donations that come through tonight actually go to local athletes, end quote. Jeanette Thorne, executive director for the West Region at Special Olympics Texas, said that this event helps with programming for athletes throughout the year. Quote, with what we raised last year, we were able to buy uniforms for a team, end quote, Thorne said. Quote, we want to be able to give as much as we can back to the athletes so that they don't have to pay for anything, end quote. Thorne added that Tip a Cop also helps them create scholarships for Special Olympics athletes and helps them buy any needed equipment. McKenzie, who has worked at Midland's Texas Roadhouse for 5 years, said that this year has the biggest turnaround he's ever seen. Quote, I can't tell you how excited I was when I saw all of the sheriff's department here. Sheriff Kreiner is awesome, end quote, Thorne said. Quote, he has a personal interest in Special Olympics, and seeing all the Midland Police Department and our unified champion schools and athletes, it is amazing, end quote. Over the past 15 years, Texas Roadhouse restaurants across the state have raised more than $1.9 million at the Tip a Cop event for Special Olympics. Quote, I think this supports and shows what Roadhouse stands for, end quote, McKenzie said. Quote, they give back locally, end quote. Rosales said that she's happy with the turnout of this year's event because she loves to get involved in the community. Thorne added that she's grateful for the support toward the Special Olympics. Quote, the Permian Basin is truly a community-based area, end quote, Thorne said. Quote, the community comes out tenfold to help Special Olympics, end quote. Sergeant Thomas Gray of the Midland County Sheriff's Office said he was glad to be participating in the Tip a Cop event. Quote, this event is for an amazing cause, end quote, Gray said. Quote, we are happy and humbled to be here, end quote. Film. Chalamet stars as a young Bob Dylan. After months of filming, the upcoming new film, A Complete Unknown, featuring Timothée Chalamet portraying a young Bob Dylan, just dropped, giving fans an inside glimpse before the movie's release. The upcoming film features writer and director James Mangold. He is known for his work on Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, and according to IndieWire, offered a few hints as filming was wrapping up. Quote, by the way, it's not really a Bob Dylan biopic, end quote, Mangold said in the report. Quote, it's more about a moment in time, end quote, the report explains, when a 17-year-old Dylan hitchhikes to New York with $16 in his pocket to visit Woody Guthrie in the hospital. Mangold describes the film as a moment in American culture during the social and civil upheaval in the 1960s. The fated encounters Dylan meets that lead to worldwide stardom and fame, and his transition and journey from acoustic to electric. Chalamet will portray a young Dylan, along with co-stars Benedict Cumberbatch, Elle Fanning, Boyd Holbrook, Monica Barbaro, and Nick Offerman, IBDB reported. In recent years, Chalamet has been on top of his game with blockbuster hits such as Wonka and Dune, and will share his singing chops while performing Dylan's songs in the upcoming film. A Complete Unknown is anticipated to hit theaters in December 2024. However, an exact date has not been released, according to Rolling Stone. Life Tributes. Dr. Marlon David Springer, Ph.D., 5-2-1938 to 7-24-2024. Dr. Marlon David Springer, Ph.D., died in the early morning hours of July 24, 2024. Marlon was born in Lamesa on May 2, 1938, the firstborn of Grover and Irene Springer. Marlon is survived by his second wife, Paula, his three children, Markham, Scott, Trina Springer, Melanie, Lynn, David Johnson, and Nancy Annette, Jim Chase Springer. Six grandchildren, Dustin Chase, Alicia Johnson, Dwight Joe Ike, Kirsten Brunner, Ryan Hunter, Sophie Johnson, Cody Spencer, Natalie Johnson, Thomas Scott Springer, and Catherine Ann Springer. And five great-grandchildren, Finley Scott Johnson, Wilder Hayes Johnson, Hallie Raylan Johnson, Emerson Fox Johnson, and Ophelia Michelle Brunner. And his brother, Stephen McKay, Barbara Springer. Marlon is preceded in death by his parents, Grover Marlon and Edith Irene McNerlin Springer, his brothers Patrick Johnson Springer and Michael Jackson Springer, and his first wife, Sylvia Ann Walker Springer. A graveside service will be held at Trinity Memorial Park Chapel, Big Spring, Texas, on Wednesday, July 31st, 2024, at 10 o'clock a.m. In lieu of flowers, please consider making a donation to New Mexico Christian Children's Home, 1356 NM 236, Portales, New Mexico, 88130, www.nmcch.org. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Kimberly K. Braley, 9/26/1959 to 7/18/2024. Kimberly K. Braley, 64, of Midland, Texas, passed away on July 18, 2024. Visitation will be Sunday, July 28, 2024, from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Services will be Monday, July 29, 2024, starting at 10 o'clock a.m. at Kelview Heights Baptist Church Chapel. Kimberly was born on September 26, 1959, in Tucson, Arizona, to Neil Frederick Richter and Joyce Lynn Marla Richter. Kimberly is survived by her daughter Amber Lynn Mabane, husband Cody of Midland, Texas, son Neil Braxton Braley, wife Paige of Lubbock, Texas, granddaughters Siley Mabane Alsack, husband Austin of Orlando, Florida, Cassidy Lynn Mabane of Midland, Texas, Katie Brianne Mabane of Lubbock, Texas, and Rachel Ann Barner of Tucson, Arizona, sister Brenda Worthington of Tucson, Arizona, brother Keith Richter, wife Cindy of Tucson, Arizona. Kimberly is preceded in death by her parents Neil Frederick Richter, September 2023, and Joyce Lynn Richter, December 2023. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Billy Jean Newcomb, 11/29/1937 to 7/2/2024. Billy Jean Newcomb, 86, passed away on July 2, 2024 in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Bill was born November 29, 1937 in Durant, Oklahoma. Bill is survived by his loving wife, Sarah Annetta McMillan of Hinesville, Arkansas. Three daughters, Jean Robinson Burt, to whom Bill introduced, of Midland, Texas, Janice Thomas of Branford, Florida, Terry Marie Neff Barry of Cedar Creek, Texas. Two sons, David Newcomb of Snyder, Texas, and William Newcomb of Hinesville, Arkansas. 11 grandchildren and many great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by one son, Nathan Newcomb, daughter-in-law, Debbie Newcomb, son-in-law, Mike Thomas. His parents, Woodrow and Bertha May Haney Newcomb, brother Troy and sister-in-law, Doris Newcomb, sister Betty Melton and brother-in-law, Doc Melton, and sister Kay Harper. The service was held on July 12, 2024 in Bastrop, Texas, at Bastrop First Assembly of God. He was laid to rest at Bateman Cemetery. The family appreciates all the love and prayers received. Scott Wayne Tanberg, 4/11/1949 to 7/23/2024. Scott Wayne Tanberg, born April 11, 1949, passed peacefully on July 23, 2024. He is survived by his wife, Shelley Tanberg, son Mark Tanberg, daughter Erin Lloyd, sister Carla Colvert, grandson Caleb Lloyd, and son-in-law Mike Lloyd. He is preceded in death by his parents, Walter and Lucille Tanberg. As per Scott's wishes, only a private family memorial will be held. If you wish to honor Scott's memory, please consider donating to the Permian Basin Animal Advocates, PBAA, or the animal shelter of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Anne Lenore Conrad, 2/18/1944 to 7/15/2024. Anne Lenore Conrad, fondly known as Ma and Big Anne, took her first breath of heavenly air on July 15th, 2024, surrounded by family. Ann, 80, of Claude, Texas, was born in Midland, Texas, to Joe and Verna Cannon on February 18, 1944, and was the second oldest of nine children. Ann is survived by her husband of nearly 56 years, Glenn Conrad, of Claude, Texas, her four children, 11 grandchildren, Shannon Cornell and husband Clint of Claude, Jessica Bevel, Devin Cornell, Bradley Cornell, Chris Hall and husband Mark of Canyon, Mackenzie Ogle, Kayla Stokes, Corey Thornton and husband Cade of Weatherford, CJ Emma Thornton, and Sean Conrad and wife Christy, Alexia, Kaylee, Annalise and Kinley Conrad of Amarillo, as well as 11 great-grandchildren. Her surviving siblings include Joe Ed Cannon of Abilene, Mike Cannon of Midland, Jerry Cannon of Lubbock, Chris Cannon of Canyon, Kim Cannon of Wickenburg, Arizona, and Tim Cannon of Keller. She has also been blessed with seven wonderful sister-in-laws, 23 nieces and nephews, as well as 59 great-nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, Joe and Verna Cannon, a sister, Carol Cannon, a baby brother, Patrick Cannon, and two loving brother-in-laws. A vigil service and rosary was held at St. Teresa's Catholic Church on July 24, 2024 at 6:30 p.m. The funeral mass of Christian burial was concelebrated by Father Hridaya Raju Kondamudi, Father Tony Noosh, and Father Scott Rafe at St. Teresa's Catholic Church in Panhandle, Texas on July 25, 2024 at 10 o'clock a.m. In honor of Anne's love of a vibrant palette, people in attendance were invited to wear colorful clothing to her services. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made to St. Teresa's Catholic Church, P.O. Box 366, 110 Little Flower Way, Panhandle, Texas, 79068, 0366, or Franciscan Sisters of Christ the Light, 119 Franciscan Way, Box 906, Panhandle, Texas, 79068. Howell Graham Webb, Midland. Graham left this heavenly earth on July 24th, 2024, and now he soars with the eagles. No services are planned. Arrangements are under the care of Miller Family Funeral Home, Snyder, Texas. Graham was born on January 1, 1954 in Abilene, Texas, to Howell and Moselle Graham Webb. He is survived by two sisters, Phyllis Tucker and husband Jerry of Colorado City, Texas, and Gloria Cruz of Sterlington, Louisiana. Special neighbor Carol and numerous nieces, nephews, and friends. He was preceded in death by parents Howell and Moselle Graham Webb, sister Della Shaw, and son Christopher Webb. Online condolences may be expressed to the family by visiting www.millerfamilyfuneralhome.com. Ethel May Williams. Ethel May Williams, 78, of Midland, passed away July 23, 2024. The family will receive guests from 6 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. Thursday, August 1, 2024, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 2 o'clock p.m. Friday, August 2, 2024, at Macedonia Baptist Church, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Gardens Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Leslie Ray Carter. Leslie Ray Carter, age 66, of Midland, Texas, passed away on Friday, June 28, 2024. A memorial service for Leslie will be held Thursday, August 1, 2024, at 2 o'clock p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home, 4616 North Big Spring Street. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Alonzo Garcia Munoz. Alonzo Garcia Munoz, 26, of Odessa, Texas, passed away on Thursday, July 18, 2024. A vigil will begin at 5 o'clock p.m. until 7 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, August 1, 2024, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Services will be at 10 o'clock a.m. on Friday, August 2nd, 2024, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.